This is DW News live from Berlin. A medical emergency at the European Football Championship. Denmark's Christian Eriksen collapses on the field in the middle of a match. But from his hospital bed, he tells teammates the game must go on. We'll get the latest on his condition. Also coming up on the show, a show of unity at the G7 summit in Britain as leaders of rich democracies say they must work together to offer the world an alternative to Chinese global influence. And the woman who hopes to lead Germany. The Green Party officially names Annalena Baerbock as its first ever candidate for chancellor ahead of September's elections. Hello, I'm Claire Richardson. A very warm welcome to the show. We begin with some news from the European Soccer Championship. Denmark's Christian Eriksen is said to be awake and in stable condition in hospital after he collapsed on the pitch during the match against Finland in Copenhagen. A medical crew was immediately called in. They gave the midfielder chest compressions and were able to revive him. Now, the game was suspended but was resumed at the request of both teams, with Denmark going on to lose 1-0. Well, Mark Corrigan from DW Sports joins me now for more. Mark, I was surprised to hear that the game, in fact, resumed so quickly. What are we supposed to make of that?
Yeah, we were all astonished here, and I think the whole European football base, fan base, was astonished to hear that the game would not only be resumed, but so soon, that very evening. It seems to be a good sign in terms of how Christian Eriksen is doing. We heard that he apparently contacted his teammates via FaceTime from his hospital bed and basically gave his blessing that they would go ahead. And UEFA, the governing body of European football, did say that requests were made by players of both teams, and that was why they'd agreed to restart the game. But very surprising. The game did go on with Eriksen's blessing, but the Finns hadn't read the script that Denmark should go on and win.
Yeah, that would have been a happier ending, wouldn't have it? Well, let's take it back. I mean, what exactly happened with Eriksen on the pitch?
It was a very innocuous incident, Claire. It was he was waiting for a throw-in, took the throw-in, was receiving the ball from the throw-in and fell to the ground. There was immediate concern. His players, his teammates formed a cordon around him, as we can see, protecting him from the view of the camera. Very emotional scenes. Some were crying, some were praying. And the defibrillators were brought on. He was given treatment on the field, and thankfully he was awake by the time he'd come off the field. So, and then obviously seems to be recovering. He's in a stable condition. The Danish Football Association have tweeted, and he's in the Rigshospitalet in Copenhagen, which is a specialised hospital, getting the very best treatment available in Copenhagen.
That's fantastic news for the team and fans alike, I'm sure. I mean, the whole incident was so shocking, those images. But have we seen something like this before on a football pitch?
We have seen it before, sadly, and it seems to be a slightly modern phenomenon, everything in the 21st century. One of the most infamous ones was Fabrice Muamba, who was playing for Bolton against Tottenham in England in 2012. He collapsed on the pitch and was technically dead for 78 minutes before being revived. So luckily we didn't get to that stage tonight. So that was a huge concern back then. Fabrice Muamba actually tweeted his support, saying simply, please God, that he was praying for Christian Eriksen. So his prayers have been answered, and we wish Christian Eriksen all the best.
Fabulous. Mark Corrigan, thank you so much for coming in the studio to talk to us. Turning to other news now, and leaders of the Group of Seven wealthy democracies have agreed on a major infrastructure plan aimed at competing with China's global influence. They've spent the second day of the G7 summit in southwest England focusing on ways to counter the rising influence of authoritarian states.
A postcard-perfect meeting on the beach. Environmental activists are worried the G7 summit will deliver little more than pretty pictures. In the hotel above, the talk is all about bolstering the global economic recovery after the pandemic. Joe Biden wants the Europeans to commit to joining a global infrastructure program to balance the investment influence of China. Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel supports the idea. We know there's a huge need for infrastructure in places like Africa. It's in our interest that Africa develops its economy. We can't simply say that China is already taking care of that. Rather, it is the G7's aspiration to create a positive agenda aimed at the many countries in the world that still have a lot of catching up to do. Threatening to overshadow the display of unity is the infighting between EU leaders and the summit's host, Boris Johnson. The British Prime Minister's threats to override the Brexit agreement's terms on trade flows to Northern Ireland was the subject of several bilateral talks. Johnson was kept waiting by French President Emmanuel Macron, who arrived with strong words threatening consequences if the UK fails to abide by the Brexit treaty's customs rules. The Prime Minister was equally forthright in his comments to the press.
It's the prime duty of the UK government to uphold the territorial integrity of the United Kingdom. And that's what we're going to do. And we'll do whatever it takes to ensure that.
The G7 leaders have been joined by guests from South Korea, South Africa, India and Australia, discussing how to end the current pandemic and prevent the next one.
And DW correspondent Birgit Maas is reporting for us from St. Ives in Cornwall, close to where the G7 is taking place this weekend. Birgit, tell us more about this infrastructure project. It's aimed at countering China's influence, it's green, and it's meant to help poorer countries catch up. That sounds very ambitious.
It is very ambitious. The U.S. has identified a $40 trillion deficit for low and middle-income countries when it comes to infrastructure. And they say that during the pandemic, this gap has even widened. So they are calling for an alternative to China's Belt and Road Initiatives, also called the New Silk Road Initiative, where China is investing across the world in developing countries. And they say they want to do something that is very transparent and also very sustainable. And the US say they want hundreds of billions of dollars invested in countries and in climate change projects, but also when it comes to health and digital technology. And now they have the G7 on board. No concrete plans and no concrete financial commitments, but that might yet be to come.
Now, thousands of people have gathered near the summit venue to protest against all kinds of issues, but the vast majority are concerned about climate change. Is this initiative what the G7 has to offer?
Yes, definitely. All around me here in St. Ives, in this really beautiful spot in the southwest corner of the United Kingdom, on the beaches and in the sea, there were a lot of climate change protesters. Extinction Rebellion was one of the biggest groups, and they are really very critical, and they are saying that they're hoping there will be more than words, and are also accusing, for example, the United Kingdom to, on the one hand, present its itself as a leader in climate change or fight against climate change, but on the other hand, just this year, having licensed new oil and gas exploration licenses. So, a bit of a contradiction there. And climate change will be an issue that's going to be debated on Sunday. David Attenborough, the naturalist and big television personality known across the world, is going to talk to leaders tomorrow. So we'll have to see what campaigners say after this day tomorrow, if there is anything that they say cuts the mustard, really.
Okay, so we will check back in on that on a Sunday. Now, I understand there have been some new arrivals to the summit today. Tell us about them.
Well, besides the leaders of South Africa and Australia, it's interesting that the leaders of India and South Korea are attending either in person or virtually the summit. And this can also be seen in relation to China, basically strengthening the ties with the democracies in the Indo-Pacific region. So China and how to stand up to China and also in some instances cooperate with China when it, for example, comes to climate change, is really a dominating one of the dominating features here at the summit.
DW correspondent Birgit Maas in St. Ives, Cornwall for us. Thank you so much for your reporting. And let's turn our attention now to some other stories making headlines at this hour. A Greek court has sentenced four Afghan asylum seekers to 10 years in prison for their part in a fire that destroyed the Moria migrant camp last year. Rights groups and the UN Refugee Agency said the camp was unfit for humans. But more than 12,000 migrants were living there when the blaze broke out. Thousands of people in northeastern Burkina Faso have taken part in a demonstration to demand better security. This comes after militants killed 132 people in a village last weekend. The region has seen numerous Islamist attacks in recent years. COVID-19 infections have more than doubled in Moscow in the past few days. This has prompted the mayor to order many businesses to send workers home for 1 week. It's the first time since the spring of 2020 that such tough measures have been imposed in the Russian capital. And here in Germany, the Green Party has formally nominated the woman it hopes will replace Angela Merkel as chancellor in September's general election. Delegates at a party conference gave the nod to co-leader Annalena Baerbock. She's now the Environmental Party's first ever candidate for Germany's top job.
She's one step closer to her goal. Annalena Baerbock hopes to replace Angela Merkel as German leader and on Saturday got the backing of 98.5% of her party to run as the first ever Green candidate for Chancellor.
The
joy to take over responsibility and the knowledge that we can do it better together, that's what we're seeing emerge here. We've spent 40 years preparing for this. Now is the time to renew our country. And anything is possible.
Unser Land zu erneuern und alles ist drin.
For the past 3 years, Baerbock and Robert Habeck have been at the helm of the Green Party and led the Greens to new highs in the polls. Now the party is part of coalition governments in 11 of Germany's 16 states. Annalena Baerbock was born in northwestern Germany in 1980, the same year the Green Party was founded. It started off pushing for gender parity and environmental protection. In 1983, the first Green MPs were elected to Parliament, becoming a provocative force in the Bundestag. In 1998, the Greens entered government for the first time as the junior coalition partner to Gerhard Schröder's Social Democrats. One of the Greens' biggest victories was that coalition's decision to phase out nuclear energy. A decision that, after initial resistance, Angela Merkel's government implemented in 2011. The Greens got a boost in the polls in 2019 when the Fridays for Future climate protection movement first took to the streets. The party even edged into the lead in opinion polls before falling behind Merkel's conservatives again, partly because of a controversy surrounding multiple false claims in Baerbock's official CV. I want to thank you for giving me this massive tailwind, especially after the headwind of recent weeks, where I made some mistakes that I'm extremely upset about. It's 3 months until Germans go to the polls, and for both the Green Party and for its new Chancellor candidate Annalena Baerbock, they're looking to be the most important 3 months in their 40 years of existence.
Sports news now, and let's get an update from the world of tennis. At the French Open, unseeded Barbora Krejcikova has beaten Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova in the women's final. It is the first Grand Slam singles title for the 25-year-old Czech.
Spurred by the memory of her late coach, former Wimbledon champion Jana Novotná, Barbora Krejcikova, at the top of your screen, stormed into an early lead in this clash of the outsiders, breaking in the fourth game before winning the set 6-1. But Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova refused to crumble and surged back to take the second set 6-2. In the decisive third, Krejcikova broke serve to go 4-3 up after a thrilling 10-shot rally. And she clinched the title on her fourth championship point when Pavlyuchenkova hit long. A first major trophy for the Czech, which she was presented with by the legendary Martina Navratilova. Krejcikova now bids to become the first woman since Mary Pierce to win the French Open singles and doubles titles in the same year.
That is your news update at this hour. Coming up next, Shift looks at the darknet as a playground for criminals. Of course, there's always more on our website, dw.com, or on social media at DW News. I'm Claire Richardson in Berlin. That is all from me for now. For me and the entire team here, thank you so much for joining us.